And a welcome back to Wind Against Tide podcast, here with myself, Dave Standing, Joseph Fernand, and one of our favourite fishing local identities. Where is that guy, actually? Oh, no, we got Pete instead.
There you go, Pete. That's all right, Dave.
Lovely of you to come into studio and join us, Pete. One of the reasons we've got you in is because we want to have a quick chat, amongst other things, about a little event we've got coming up very soon.
Yeah, in early November.
Early November, looking forward to it. We are going to be at Poker Face in Berwick again, where Joey and I did a podcast alongside the guys from The Deep Drop, Luke and Adam, which was a great night. And Pete has decided he's going to launch season 3 of Fishing with Fergie, and we'll be doing another live podcast from the venue. So that'll be mid-November, and there's going to be all sorts of cool prizes, I've heard, Pete.
Yeah, Dave, we've got some pretty cool stuff. I've been working with some of my good supporters, and mate, I've got a massive box of stuff at home. There's Maui gym glasses, there's a boat catch, there's atomic gear, I've got so much gear. There's travel buddy ovens. We've got everything going on, mate. We're going to have a ripper night, heaps of laughs, heaps of giveaways, and Joey's on the food.
I'm glad you introduced me like that, Pete, because I've got a question about travel buddy ovens, but I'll ask you about that a little bit later. But no, thanks. It's been a little while, mate. It's great to see you again.
Thanks very much.
And I'm looking forward to hearing about what season 3 you've got in store for Fishing with Fergie. Just quickly, how's the first couple of seasons gone for you?
Surprised the hell out of me, Joe. It's actually rated really good. When I talk to the guys in at Channel 31, and they tell me I'm getting 20 to 30,000 viewers a week. Now, that's blew my mind. Who'd want to watch this idiot, you know?
After how long?
Two seasons. So that's really good. And we've actually reached out, and Channel 44, which is their sister station in Adelaide, have picked the show up as well. So it's now airing in Adelaide as well, which is pretty exciting.
Awesome.
I might move to Adelaide just so I can watch Fishing with Fergie again from a different state.
You can always watch it just on your phone, Dave, and play back too, mate.
Half an hour behind, so yeah.
That's it. So we can time travel in order to get maximum Fergie streaming time.
What that means, though, guys, we're just going to do a road trip. We'll go to South Australia and we'll go and catch some of those 55, 60-centimetre whiting they have and do a combined show.
Well, no, you go to Tassie for that these days, don't you know?
No, they're 60-centimetre plus that.
You actually have gone to South Australia back in the day to catch the big snapper. You went to White Whyalla, didn't you?
Yeah, I did an Arno Bay trip. Oh, what's that, about 14 years ago now? We did an Arno Bay trip, a group of us.
Yeah, how was that?
It was pretty good. We got a heap of fish, like 20-pound fish, sort of like back then, who cared? But look at the fishery. It's collapsed.
Full-on collapsed. Tell us about it. Tell us. I never went there. From an outside perspective view on it is there's like this one big wreck, and the pros and the wrecks all just target this one sunken ship or something.
Yeah, it was a 65-foot wreck off memory, Dave, out in the middle of the bay. And everyone just jostles around this thing. You know, like we were anchored up on it. And one of the other charter operators, he was trying to get in, I remember. And he came up going, all right, you guys are caught fish. Get off and let me have a go. Oh. And our skipper said, you know, go to buggery. We're not moving. And he actually went around the front of us, dropped his anchor in front of our boat, and then motored himself around so that his anchor rope was under our boat to fish on the wreck.
That's unbelievable.
That's how crazy it was over there. It made Port Phillip Bay look safe.
Wow. Yeah. That's saying something. So the pros were taking tons and tons of snapper off this one.
Everybody was, roof. Dave. The pros, the wrecks. And look, I'm not pointing fingers. You never do want to do that. But you look back at the days when you saw a lot of footage going over there and people were pulling up 20-pound snapper using brim gear to be heroes and spearing it back in 30 metres of water. Those fish were never going to live. So end of the day, they paid the toll, and unfortunately they're now in, what, a 5 or 6 year ban on snapper.
Yeah. But now, Fergie, you focus your big snapper attention here in Victoria at your beloved Port Welsh Pool.
I do love Port Welsh Pool.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Port Welsh Pool is a pretty holds a pretty soft, you know, special spot in the heart, Joe. It's been very kind to me. It is a tough fishery. You guys have been there. It makes fishing Western Port look easy. You know, the bigger tides and that, but I love it. It's given me 5 snapper over 20 pound now.
Yeah.
Which is
crazy. And not a great amount of time, really.
No, that's 5 in 7 years that have been over 20, and we've probably got, I'm not trying to brag or anything here, but we've got somewhere around between 45 and 50 fish in that 8 to 8.5 kilo bracket as well, the 19 pound.
Because when I first met you back in 2010, I remember you were fishing three, four days a week in Western Port on the hunt for a 20-pounder. Did you ever come close to getting a 20-pounder in Western Port?
Western Port hates me. Western Port, the best I got out of Western Port is 8.5 kilos, which is a bloody cracking fish.
You remember time of year where?
Oh, I can tell you, mate, it was the end of May and right out the front of Hastings.
There you go.
Right out front. Sat there for 5 hours without losing a bait.
Yep.
Watching Netflix and 15 minutes left in the tide, Rod Howes, 8.5 kilo snapper.
Unreal.
That's cold water fishing then.
Can I say something about this snapper releasing thing we briefly mentioned before?
Yep.
Something that's really interesting because, yeah, all the studies I read were that, you know, anything over 8 metres, their chance of surviving significantly decreases. But there's one guy up on the New South Wales coast there, Chris Cleaver.
Yep.
He has recaptured the same snapper or a couple of the same snapper 3 to 4 times now fishing in deep water.
He's in like 50 and 60 metres of water.
Yeah.
My read on that, Dave, is he's way offshore for a start, so he hasn't got the current.
Mm-hmm.
Fishing a lot lighter, taking your time to work the fish up.
Yeah.
And I think when I'm at Walshpool, I'm fishing anywhere between 15 and 35 metres, right? A lot of time in 18 to 20 metres. I actually judge each fish as it comes to the boat. Some of those big snapper, they're not releasable. When they come up to the boat, the first thing you see is this big white belly. The fish just rolls over and it comes up bloated.
Mm. Oh, yeah, and they come up big and everyone's yahooing like they've done it.
Exactly. And I look, the theory I sort of work on, if that fish just floats into my net, it's coming home. If that fish is still fighting at the side of the boat, it's a releaser. And 9 out of 10 times, I don't even pull it out of the water. Yep. I just get the old flatty flipper, one of those, you know, Ocean Creations, a big long one.
Yeah, the long nose.
Reach over and just roll that circle, look out of its mouth in the water's edge and just let it swim straight down.
Yep.
You know, each fish is different, mate.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, those the fish flickers are a good thing because as soon as you start holding them out of the water, you're again, not only are you exposing them to a lack of oxygen for themselves, the chances of you harming them by holding them in the wrong spot, hands slipping into gills or whatever,
100%,
taking slime off with your fingers dramatically increases just for a photo. So, yeah.
And I think one of the good things about Welshie like that too, Dave, because we're not getting reefed, these snapper aren't reefing you, you know, fishing over heavy kanji, we're not getting shark like up north. I've got fish on film that are taking me 12 minutes to get to the boat because I'm not fishing stupid hard drags on them. So if you let that fish come up slowly too, it's also equalising itself as you get up through the column.
Yeah.
It's when you skull drag a fish up from 30 metres of water, well, his bladder's gone. But if you can work him up, take your time, fish him nice and easy, work him to the boat, mate, you've got the chance to release that fish.
I like that. That's good. Now, you mentioned, Pete, that there is there's a fishing competition down at Welshpool coming up that you're participating in. Give me a little bit of a preview about what the competition is and how you prepare for such a competition.
It's the South Kippy Game Fishing Comp, Joe. It's their biggest snapper and gummy comp they run each year. And last year they started it and this year they're doing the same. They're doing 8-day competition.
When's that from?
November the 4th to the 11th, I think it is. And
it's
they
just
decided
after Melbourne Cup, right?
Yeah, straight after Melbourne Cup. Excuse me a sec.
All right.
That's a bit of a tickle there. Doing it over 8 days, because as the organisers said to me one day, as soon as we book a date, you can guarantee it's going to blow a gale. So they do a cat. Now it's all done on a brag mat too, so you can release fish.
Oh, that's good.
That's all done by length, and you upload it to an app, and just that's it, mate. And the longest fish wins. So that's pretty cool.
Mm. And you're planning to fish all of it?
Yeah, well, it goes for 8 days and I have blocked out my diary for the 8 days. I know being Welshpool, mate, it's probably going to allow me to fish about 3 days out of 8.
Yes.
But in that case that the weather gods are nice to me for a week, I'm there. I'm fishing it hard, mate. The freezer is stocked up with bait.
Yep.
I've been catching squid for the last few weeks. Freezer is stocked and I'm going to fish it hard.
And you expect the snapper to be on pretty strong that time of year traditionally at Welshpool?
100%. 100%. It is actually the start of the Welshpool season. It's later than Melbourne.
Yep.
And Welshpool will fish very well right through to Christmas and even into January.
Yep.
So it's quite good.
Yeah, it's interesting that Welshpool tends to be the last systems really far up. And then, we've always found December, like early December, a really good time there. Whereas our bays are sort of starting to taper off a little bit by that stage, Welshpool's really coming into its own with some cracking big fish around it as well. What are a couple of the for those that are planning on entering that competition or might be fishing Welshpool for the first time, Pete, can you give away a couple of trade secrets?
boat preparation is not so much a trade secret, but I've done a fair few guides up there, and one of the first things I noticed, people's anchoring systems aren't up to scratch. If you're normally fishing Port Phillip Bay and you've got just your standard 4 kilo, 5 kilo, whatever is plow anchor, it just won't hold. The tides are too big. You've got to be prepared with bigger anchors, heaps of chain, and your safety gear's got to be up to scratch, Dave. There's a bit of different rules up there as well.
Yeah, okay. So it's all classified as offshore, isn't it?
No, it's got its own classification, coastal, inshore. It's the two words together. It's funny, you can actually launch there and drive all the way to Lake's entrance and not need an EPIRB because you're going to be 2 nautical miles from the coast. But as soon as you get up into the top of the Franklin area and you get up around Doughboy, it's technically you need an EPIRB. And the fisheries and the coppers are dynamite up there. You've got to have it. And look, my stance is always pretty simple on safety gear. For the cost of it, there's no excuse. You just have it.
No. Well, we recently had a podcast with Mark Sullivan who had a mishap with a whale, let's just say. And that really reiterated the need to have everyone's safety gear up to date. So that's a good thing to have regardless of whether or not you're going to get checked or not.
Exactly. And the other trade secret, I guess, Dave, is sinkers. Be prepared. And your gear's got to be heavier. We're fishing 14s, 16s and 20 ounces of lead. Very rarely am I down under 8.
Even in some of those smaller channels?
Mate, I'll be fishing in 14 metres of water and mid-tide I'm struggling to hold with 20 ounces.
Wow.
The tide absolutely roars. It's like fishing, for those who fish Western Port, it's like trying to fish buoy 12 all tide.
Hmm. Yep.
It's that fast.
It's a different beast, that's for sure.
It is.
Now, moving off your favourite subject of snapper briefly and maybe backpedalling slightly, we are moving into season 3 of Fishing with Fergie. So we want to know what's in store for the viewers' eyeballs in this season, Peter.
A lot more hints, Dave, on how to do things. As a feedback from some people, they go, hey, Pete, look, we know you catch fish. We don't need to see you catch 10 fish. Show us more how to do it. And people really love the information. And that's some of the best feedback. And I love it, guys. When I'm at the ramp and I'm launching and someone walks past going, Fergie, love what you do. Love the hints. I'm picking up this. I'm picking up that. That's the stuff I love to hear back.
Mm.
And so I've incorporated pretty much every show's got a tackle talk in it or a boating hint in there. You know, like I've already prepared a lot of clips, Dave. I've got knot tying clips and, you know, safety clips and boat preparation clips to help people get out there and do it.
Yep. Yeah. So I guess that's what we're really promoting is for people to get out and enjoy the same sport which we've grown up and been lucky enough to enjoy ourselves. So,
and it's not all, Dave, about catching the hero fish, is it? End of the day, we love catching a big snapper. That's my addiction, 100%.
Mm.
But I can still remember my very first legal snapper. Paul Worsling helped me go and catch it. Gave me all the hints, same as I do to people. And it was a 4.5 kilo fish at Crawfish Rock.
Yep.
All right. And yeah, then for the next 3 years, I didn't probably catch another fish over 4 kilos, but it started the addiction. And it hasn't got to be a 10 kilo fish to be a hero fish. A PB might be a 4 kilo fish, you know, and that's it. The 4 kilo snapper, people don't realise any fish over 4 kilos is a bloody good snapper.
Absolutely.
It is. A lot of people would kill to catch something.
I think it's a great what you bring up. It's more about the methodology about being consistently being able to catch. I've said it on previous podcasts. You know, I started out fishing with my dad and uncle from a young age and just loved it. So something we did over summer and just for years and years and years, we weren't very good. But it got to about, you know, just after finishing high school, early 20s, I said, Dad and uncle, we're no good at fishing. We've got to get better at this, and started going to tackle talk nights and started going to online forums and just learning how to get better at fishing. So for you being able to do a show and teach people how to get better at fishing and give people some strong methodology how to consistently catch, that's when people can get hooked on fishing for life.
100%, Joe. And how did I learn a lot? Early days, I went to talks at Tackle World, at Lofty Store, you know, listened to Wing of 20 years ago, Simon Rinaldi, you know, Gwayne Blakes, whatever, all these people that were willing to give up their time and their information. And I went there like a sponge and soaked it in and went away and tried it. And one of the best things for me that the Fishing with Fergie, you know, the whole package, you know, the TV, the Facebook, the whatever, has allowed me to do, it's opened up doors for me to now go to clubs and pass on that information.
Yep.
And I actually get a real buzz out of that. And, you know, the classes I've done like down at Hastings, doing classroom things with 5 or 6 people in there for 4 hours, teaching them the nuts and bolts and the one percenters, right?
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about that is a month later I get a message. Fergie, look what I caught, you know? And
yeah, it's good.
That's a real buzz. I get a real buzz out of that, you know? And I'm really enjoying giving back because, you know, a lot of people don't do that. In fishing, everyone wants to, oh, it's my secret spot. I can't tell you what I did. You know what? You got to share knowledge.
Yeah, it's there for all of us to 100%, enjoy.
100%, mate.
I love most of all is when you see the younger generation coming through and you realise that, like we used to look up to, you know, guys like Rex, Paul, E.T.,
yep.
A lot of which we've actually had on the podcast, which has been a bit of a spin out for us. But, you know, we used to look up to them and then the new generation is now looking up to people like yourself and, you know, various other fishing identities, probably Joe mainly, I'd say.
Oh, 100%
And it's just great to see that there's still such a buzz about the sport with the younger gen. And when they send up, like we get a few messages from them where they've caught a dream fish and it's very rewarding when they've taken something they've heard from our podcast or watched on one of our videos and put into action. And you can see the thrill in their eyes.
And Dave, you know what? It hasn't even got to be a fish.
Mm.
I got a driving here tonight. I had a message come through from a guy I did a guide with. G'day, Brett, and his young son, George. George was an 8-year-old and he wanted to catch gummies. And I rock up there and his dad says, Pete, he follows everything you do. He's on YouTube like daily to see if there's a new one. And I gave him one of these atomic hats at the end of the guide. I said, hey, have the hat. I got a photo that next morning of George sleeping in that hat, you know. And his dad George just loves it. Every time they catch a fish, he sends me a picture of George holding a gummy or something, right? And now they've actually just reached out and said, Fergie, we want you to help Georgie catch his big snapper, you know.
Yeah.
And this kid's 8-year-old. He's addicted, mate, you know. I mean, you see a kid like that that's got that much passion to the sport, that is gold to be able to help someone on that journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Awesome.
That's the best bit.
Last time we had you on, Pete, you gave us a bit of an exclusive because you were actually putting a new engine on your trusty vessel, which you've had for a fair while now. You've repowered.
Yep.
You went with the Suzuki. How are you finding it? How's the new engine?
I've done just under 80 hours already, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I love it. It's exceptionally good on fuel. It's very quiet. That's the one thing I'm noticing. The Evinrude was a powerhouse, but it was a bit noisy. Suzuki's beautiful. It actually has balanced my boat better. You'll notice we'll get you out soon. It's I use my trim tabs a lot less than I used to. The big V6 used to have a lot more torque. I guess the boat would lean a bit to one side with the torque. But the way the motor sits over the transom, all the weight is further forward in the Suzuki design, the way they do their offset gearbox and the crankcase and that, and it's balanced the boat. The boat's a lot nicer to drive. It's not as fast, but it's a lot nicer to drive.
Mm. That's interesting. Like, there's always been a bit of a push to go quicker and quicker and quicker, but there's a lot to be said for setting up a fishing boat that is going to cruise at an economical speed and carry weight nicely. I actually went fishing with a mate the other day. He's got a Cudacraft bad boy, one of the big fast things.
Yep.
And he's sold it, or he's trying to sell it. And he's gone back to a Stabycraft. I'd never been in a Stabycraft before, but this thing was real impressive. I really thought quite a lot of it as a fishing boat because it was very stable and it didn't set any speed records, but it cruised along nicely and we were comfortable. And to me, that's what you want in a fishing boat, not going bloody so fast that, you know, and then you come off a wave wrong and you get thrown to the floor. You want something that's going to get you home at the end of the day. And the other day we were fishing in the most atrocious conditions you could ever imagine offshore. We had waves coming over the top and it was just 100%, not for 1 second was it unsafe. So it sounds like a Stabycraft flag, but what I'm trying to actually get at is sometimes it's the boat that you want. It's not a speed boat. It's a solid fishing foundation that's going to get you out.
Say, Dave, there's no perfect boat,
yeah.
Right? If the perfect world, we'd own three boats, you know, a bass boat, a speed boat. But my boat's the same thing. You've both fished in that boat of mine over the years. You know, it's an exceptional bay boat and it's a capable offshore boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got good stability at rest. It handles the rough pretty well. It's not offshore. It's not the fastest boat offshore, but you know what? It's stable. And I can sit offshore most days when there's 15 knots of wind. I can still sit on sort of anywhere 20 to 23, 24 knots offshore. That's plenty fast offshore, isn't it?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that, yeah.
You know, but I know that boat. That's why, Dave, it's 13-year-old now. It's on its fourth motor. It's done about 2,500 engine hours, which not much of that's trolling. I've probably only got 150 hours that trolling. So it's a lot of hours on the hull. But you know what? I know it. It takes me wherever I go. It's safe. So I'm not selling that boat in a hurry at all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because you've thought a couple of times over the years about changing it.
I actually had Penny on board about 5 years ago. And we did. We went and seriously looked at other boats. And Penny, they always got to listen to the wife at the end of the day. At the end of the day, going out looking at boats, she said to me, so, okay, it's your boat plus 60 or 80 K to buy your boat. And I've gone, you know what? You're right. You know, all I was getting was another six and a half metre boat that was not going to perform any better than my boat. Mm. And it was going to cost me 80 K.
Yep.
So just do a repower and go again, you know?
Yeah. Very wise words and makes good economic sense as well. Right, so we've covered a little bit about your new engine. We've got the big live show coming up shortly, new Fishing with Fergie season. I thought tonight we might discuss briefly a little bit about the whole process of making fishing media and YouTube and television, because it's something we haven't really discussed very much on the show before, and there's heaps and heaps of people that want to get into it, but it's very important that if you're going to do it, you got to do it to the best of your ability. And Joey and I have been at this for a very long time now, and it's a very tough nut to crack. What have you found, Pete, in the whole fishing media world? What makes a good product to go either onto YouTube or onto C31 or various other formats?
Well, it's like anything in life, I guess. It's your preparation, you know, the old piss poor preparation type thing.
Mm.
So frustrating. You guys have seen it as well when you were filming with everyone else and your own stuff. You go home, you think you've had a great day, and you look at the footage and there's a bloody water dot right in the middle of the camera lens.
Mm.
You know, and sometimes you go, I've just got to use that bit of clip even though it's because it's so good. But it's all those attention to details. You're trying to catch fish, but you've got to remember, I've got to clean that camera lens all the time. Is the battery charged? You know, how often you're in the middle of a good bite or something and a battery goes flat on you, you know?
Mm.
It is challenging, and what people don't realise is a show might take 3 days to film a bloody show.
Definitely.
It can be, you know, like it can look like, and some people go, oh, it's all right, you guys are out there smashing fish, all you do is catch fish after fish. We might have put 10 or 12 hours in to get 24 minutes of clip for TV.
The people at home don't see the times you don't catch.
Oh, mate. I could open a Krispy Kreme donut shop 100% and not buy any material. And that's one of the things I will openly post that on my Facebook stuff as a report. And people go, I'm glad you say when you get the tough trips, you know, because we pull more donuts. How many donut trips have you had on barrels this year, Dave?
Oh, heaps. I'm cursed at the moment. We've caught one, lost three, missed about 10 trips in a row.
Broken a gaff.
Not in a row.
Broken a gaff, yeah.
But, interesting, the thing you're saying about if a battery runs out mid-session or something, like the temptation, it takes so much discipline to stop fishing, change that camera over, get your gear going again and refilm. Like I've literally had it where we've been hooked up to a 100-kilo tuna, mid-fight, battery runs out, and we've literally put the rod in the rod holder and gone and got the cameras going again and then resumed the fight.
Could have lost that fish.
We could have easily lost that fish, but to us, the value in the fish was filming it and sharing that moment. So if we weren't going to film it, then we may as well have lost it. Well, not to that extreme. We still wanted to land it, but you know what I mean? It's the most important thing at that time is to capture the moment. And if you take that temptation and just go, oh, bugger it, we'll just get the fish, well, you've lost, that content's gone.
Well, that's a classic, Dave. Like I was catching some whiting a couple of days ago. Mm. And, you know, it's like particularly I was solo. And on whiting, the hardest thing when you're solo is to keep that bite going. You know, and the first thing you want to do is get the whiting off the hook, get a bait, get straight back in the water. But you know what? You've got to not present the camera, show how you rebait the hook. And what people don't realise is in actually doing that TV, it actually costs us a lot of fishing time.
Oh, 100%.
And a lot of actual captures, isn't it?
Yeah.
That extra time in going, hey, I'm going to show you how to rebait the hook and I'm going to check the camera lens is still clean, the whiting school's gone.
Mm.
Or you drift on the squid, you're off the drift now, you know? And there's a lot that goes into it. And, yeah, some days you think, oh, maybe I just leave the bloody camera in the cabin or not take the camera out because you have an awesome time.
Mm. Look, I honestly think that the best, with the amateur fishing TV, let's call it, the best time to film, well, the best way of filming is having able crew people on board. You know, when you've got, it's hard. Credit to you, Pete, doing one person filming it. Even sometimes with myself and Dave, that's two people filming with some stationary cameras, maybe one person occasionally holding one in their hand. But really, if you've got, I reckon the best number for filming is three.
You need yourself a mate to help fish with, and you need a dedicated cameraman, ideally.
Yeah.
But that's hard. Like with the stuff we're filming for Channel 31 type stuff, it's low budget. There's no big sponsors in the background paying us $100,000 a year to pay for cameramen and stuff. And
the technology is really affordable now, and the quality you can get out of it is sensational.
What we can do with GoPros and stuff like that now, yeah, it is good. And that's for the newer guys getting into it. There's some tricks in them.
It's just a tool, though. It's like you can have the best tools, but it's how you use them to perfect the best craft.
Yeah. GoPros really have revolutionized the industry. I mean, I remember back in the day filming Ufish TV and we just had the one hand camera. Yeah. And you look
mini cassette.
Yeah. You look at that imagery now and these little boxes that we've got fixed around the boat or on our heads, they're 10 times better. 100%. They've got great stability. But back in the day, it was exactly that. You needed one person on the camera all the time. There was no secondary angles or shots. And it was really hard work to make any sort of fishing TV. So now that these GoPros are widely available and pretty affordable, as Joe said, and even just your phone. Like phones take incredible footage these days.
Unbelievable what you can do with an iPhone.
The iPhone Pro 15, the new one, is just absolutely stunning what you're able to do with that. And that they make modifications now to turn your iPhone into a proper filming camera. You can do external microphones, lights, gimbals. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, that's your secondary cutaway camera right there. I mean, you got your phone and a few GoPros and anyone can go out and make a world-class bit of footage.
And so, Dave, I do a lot of solo fishing, you know, because I quite often fish weekdays. I spend the weekend with my wife or whatever. When I had the business of the place and I was working every weekend, so I was only filming weekdays and half the time the crew just aren't available.
Yeah.
So I've learned to set the boat up. I run three cameras now. I've got a remote that I just go beep and all three cameras start instantly on that little bit of a delay as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running all the time. I can just go beep and they start. But as the old thing, like I actually said it on camera the other day, I've gone, yeah, typical, turn the bloody cameras off and the bite starts. You know, you'll see a rod tip, won't you? Your rod tip's going tap, tap, tap. And you think, there, I start the camera. 2 minutes later, nothing's happening. You turn the camera off and the rod buckles over. You know, it's so hard to get it in it.
And that brings me to another point. Nobody gives a crap about watching someone wind a fish in. People want to see the bite.
Yep.
And they want to see the landing. They don't want to see someone. I mean, sometimes you'll see footage go up and it's someone winding a fish in, but they've missed the bite. And then when it comes to the point of landing, they freak out and they miss that part too. The bit in the middle is the boring bit. We want to see the bite and the landing. So got to concentrate on being on the ball for those two moments in particular.
How many hours of dead footage have we all got?
Yeah.
Like at tuna fishing, you go past a school of birds, cameras are on.
I will say something to add to that. You know, unless you're an incredibly entertaining and character.
Like you.
We had him, Steve Starling on our previous podcast, you know, Rex Hunt, he could make anything exciting. Just really.
Isn't Starlo an all-round good guy? I've been lucky. Same. So I've actually had a few conversations with Starlo lately on some bits and pieces, and the guy's just a genuine guy to talk to. Mm. And I've started listening to his podcast. Have you listened to his podcast?
Oh, well, a little bit. He told me he started that podcast because he came on our one.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's imitation's the finest form of flattery there, mate. But I was actually
except it's already more successful than ours. So. Yeah.
But he's a big name. I was listening to his podcast the other day and I almost messaged him, and this is a compliment, Steve, don't take it any other way, I almost messaged you to say, mate, it was like listening to a storytelling book. You know, it was like a kid's storytelling book. He's got such a calm, relaxed way he presents on his story. It's like someone's reading a kid's novel to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
And it's very entertaining. And I was driving 2 hours to Welshpool and I listened to about four of his podcasts in a row because I'd already finished all yours.
Yeah.
But it was just entertaining, you know. We're blessed, I guess, that, I don't know about you guys, Starlo was a hero when we were growing up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Him and Rexy and that. How much did we learn from those guys?
Heaps.
And look at him, 40 years on, he's still passing on the knowledge.
But passionate as ever as well.
100%. But you know what we talked about before, what we want to do in all this? If I was going to try and mirror myself partly on something, it'd be what Starlo does. To have his passion after all these years and still want to help people, that's a God gift, you know?
Mm.
And it's, you do the same. You go and do a talk somewhere, you help someone rig something or they send you a picture. That's gold.
Yeah, well, like there's been a couple of points where Joe and I, honestly, we could have thrown in the towel on this podcast. And the thing that kept us going was the messages that we get at people, you know, it makes their day when they are driving to and from work, or, you know, there's a funny theme that they follow along with in the show, or they send in a, you know, they send in a photo and a report because they want to hear it on the podcast. So that's what we love about it. We're certainly, and that's another great point to make. If for anyone that does want to make fishing media or fishing TV, you can't do it thinking you're going to get rich from it, because
you're not.
You're never going to. There's millions of people around the world that want to do exactly that as a job, and the percentage of people making a living out of it is very, very tiny. Not to say it's not going to happen, but you got to work on making a good product first, doing it for the right reasons, which, you know, it may be like us trying to help out a younger generation or other fisher people. And then the success, if it's going to be, if the product's good enough and you catch a couple of lucky breaks, then maybe one day you will make money out of it. But
exactly right. If the product's good enough and the content's good enough, the bottom line will take care of itself down the track in some way. You know, like I've been a little bit lucky at the moment. I've been approached by a few other companies. Hey, we're watching what you're doing. We like how you're presenting it. You're keeping it real. You're not being a flog with it. Trying, you know, we want to be involved with what you're doing, Fergie. And I'm like, how cool is that? This company just approaches me and go, can you do something with our product? We like how you present it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, well, I'm doing something right if that's happening. And the fact that some young kid comes up to me at the boat ramp, a 10-year-old, 12-year-old kid, and goes, hey, Fergie, how you going? I look what I caught, and shows you his fish. You know, it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So success will come if the product is good enough. But I guess to sum up, just enjoy what you're doing, do it for the right reasons, and do it to the best of your ability.
100%.
What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, well said.
Beautiful. Beautiful import, as always, Joey. All right, well, is there anything else we need to add to this little catch-up podcast, I guess?
Can I do a what grinds my gears?
Yeah,
Joey, hit
the buzzer.
We now go to Peter Griffin for You Know What Really Grinds My Gears.
Thanks, Tom. You know what really grinds my gears?
What really grinds Fergie's gears? And this is such a simple thing, but it is a mega one, all right? If you got your kids in the boat, put a bloody life jacket on them.
Hmm.
If there's one photo...
Oh, this has been grinding your gears for years.
Oh, it grinds my gears for years, mate. You know what?
Actual years.
It does, for years, because kids are precious. All we do as parents, you know, like Dave, you got a young child, and you know, your kid is your life. And I just hate seeing kids in a boat without a life jacket on, or they're wearing a ski jacket.
When was the last time you saw
it? On social media this week, about 20 photos.
Okay.
You know, and I just, you only get one chance if your kids, you know, you're taking the kids out, the kid's having a great day. The last thing you want to do is have your kid fall out of the boat. Something goes wrong, you know, if you had a heart attack or whatever and the boat rolled over, whatever happens, you hit a whale, you know, anything could happen as we've seen recently. Yeah. Man, those kids have got no chance, have they?
I almost had to put Dave in a life jacket when he was netting pilchards over the side of the boat, trawling through a bait pool.
I got a bit excited.
He's pretty long, but he had to dip that net all the way down. I had to put my Dave in a jacket.
But that's just a simple thing. Like, if I'll never share a photo. You know, people send me photos and I'll share them, but I'll never share a photo if the kid hasn't got a life jacket on.
Joey, it was exactly like that scene in Finding Nemo when all the fish are in the trawler net. And then they all work out that if they work together and swim down, they can break out of the net and pull the net back into the ocean.
Oh, really?
That was me with the net. All the pilchards were trying to drag me into the water.
Yeah, and true story, like that actually happened. Yeah.
And you got all the drag of that net, and then once the net gets full, were you moving at this stage or you stationary?
No, we were dip netting. I'm just glad one of the dolphins or something didn't swim into my dip net and really mess me up.
Or come up and knock you over the side of the head or something.
Yeah, well, there's always that possibility. So, yeah, be safe out there, everyone. Life jackets, good idea.
Safety. Just safety on everything, guys.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, that's a lovely way to finish. Oh, actually, I've got one more thing to add. This month, which is October, I am partaking in the Red Kidney fundraising event, raising awareness for kidney disease. It's something that affects many families, including my own. So I have to run 60 kilometres this month. I'm doing it. My wife is doing it. And her whole family is doing it. So I've already had heaps of really great responses and some donations from mates, which has been a bit overwhelming. But if anyone does want to chuck a bit of coin over or even just find out a bit more about the cause, then I'll put some links up on the socials. I've already done so, but I'll put some more up and you can jump on there and have a look at what it's all about. And hey, no pressure for anyone to donate, by the way, because it is tough times for a lot of people. So just having a read and understanding a little bit about kidney disease and how we can hopefully help eliminate some of it in the future is a big help. So just thought I'd put that one out there, boys, for anyone that's listening, have a look at that one.
And you can follow Dave on Strava as well if you want to get behind him when he's logging all of his runs. Keep him honest. What's your username on Strava?
I don't know. What is it, Joey? I've done one run that was...
Let's be honest, Joey. Is anyone going to be behind him? They're all going to be in front of him, mate, if they're running with him.
I've done one run that was 7K and I'm just on there as Dave Standing, I think, Joey.
Yeah.
Didn't you take Dave for a run last year, Joe?
I did.
And yeah, we killed him?
Yeah, we ran to the ramp. We splashed some water on his face and it was pretty fun, actually.
That was on the January 10th, Joe. We did the exact same track. And guess what? I did the same track yesterday. I clocked the same pace.
There you go. So nothing lost, nothing gained.
Those months of eating burgers and fishing trips has really paid off. There's a tip for everyone. Well,
great cause. Get behind it, everyone.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, let's wrap that one up for this show, Joey. We're going to actually hang out here a little bit longer and maybe pick Peter's brain about some maybe species-specific stuff that's going to go up at a later date. So we'll sign off for now and then we'll catch you all again later.
See you next time.
See you later.